Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Will Pruitt, here today with Jake Barnett, and we're giving you guys a special All Access edition of the .net Countdown audio show. For those of you who are new to the Countdown, what we do is we give you the top five and bottom three moments of the week in wrestling as assimilated or accumulated, whatever, by Jake and I. We put it together, we have one list, and we give it to you along with our kind of analysis and commentary as we go. Jake, how are you today, man?
Doing good. Happy to be taking a break in the middle of my work day to talk about pro wrestling. So let's dive right in.
Everyone could be so lucky.
Oh, yeah.
So let's just launch into it right now with our number five top moment of the week. And that moment belongs to Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston in their short but action-packed match on Raw. It was a solid match between these two, as it always is. Plus, we saw the reveal of the AW All-World Stable with Abraham Washington chilling with Epico, Primo, Rosa, and a ponytailed Mason Ryan. What did you think of this one?
Well, I mean, the match was solid, as you would expect. I mean, we kind of spoke briefly about both Ziggler and Kofi before, you know, we kind of launched into this on the recording, and we kind of both agreed that, you know, both of these guys have been on the cusp of the main event for years now, and I think this match has, you know, just illustrates how great they both are in the ring. But I mean, in terms of a push, they're both kind of in one of these situations where they get right up there and then, you know, Lucy pulls the football away from Charlie Brown and they, you know, they're kind of right back where they were before. So, you know, I guess this is on the Countdown because there really wasn't a whole lot of great things to talk about this week, but it does bear mentioning that both of these guys, very skilled in the ring, you know, very fluid, rarely make mistakes. You know, and both kind of, we think, deserve that main event push. And they, you know, they just don't seem to get there. As far as the stable is concerned, you know, I'm just happy they're doing something with the undercard. You know, Primo and Epico never really had much of a character. You know, that whole tag team was kind of pushed on TV on the back of Rosa's gyrations. And least having them in some kind of storyline with AW, you know, is nice, and you know, giving Mason Ryan something to do isn't terrible. I mean, he never really looked all that great on television the last time we saw him. He did look kind of clunky, but you know, I think if he's used the right way as part of a stable, he could at least contribute something meaningful on television. So I do want to see where this goes. I mean, I'm happy that we're getting, you know, mid and lower card storylines. At least that should make the show feel a little bit more well-rounded. It does seem like the main event get most of the attention, and then, you know, the undercarders are kind of left with the scraps. So hopefully this is the beginning of them trying to make this a more balanced show.
Yeah, and you talk about how to use Mason Ryan, and I think a stable is the perfect place for Mason Ryan to hang out for a little while because he doesn't have to wrestle much. He can wrestle on the house shows as part of a tag match, or you can even put him out there in a singles match against someone with some experience and let him learn that way. And he looks imposing and intimidating when he's not smiling or flexing. Just his physical presence alone, I think, works as in part of, like, the enforcer role of a stable. And I believe the Mason Ryan could do that really well. Talking about Kofi and Dolph Ziggler, those guys, I think it was in 2008 we saw there was a match against them, and we kind of went, oh, wow, this is good. These guys could probably main event WrestleMania or something at some point in the future. Maybe over in 2011, we're going to see these guys rise up to the top and really get it done. Then in 2009, we saw it and said, yeah, Dolph and Kofi, man, that's some great chemistry. 2010 came around. I think they may have been on SmackDown at that point, and we just looked in awe at how good they were. And then last year, they had some matches, and we said the same thing. And now in 2012, Dolph and Kofi are continuing their ongoing series of matches that could be future WrestleMania main events but probably won't be at this point. And it just raises the question of why haven't these guys become stars? You know, Dolph, I think he's been there for a year, where everyone's been saying, man, Dolph's the next guy. Look at his work in the ring. Look at, you know, his charisma, his, you know, rapidly improving mic work. Dolph's got it. Well, why hasn't he become that? Look at Kofi Kingston, who really showed some breakout potential in 2009, only to get pushed back. Why hasn't he become that guy? And, you know, there's a lot of factors, but I think the reluctance to push new talent is the biggest one, and the reluctance to just give someone the ball, let him run with it, and, you know, give him the opportunity to fail. Mabel got a push on top in 1995, and he failed, but, you know, they tried with King Mabel. I think something similar needs to happen, you know, win, lose, draw, fail or no fail with Kofi and Dolph Ziggler here pretty soon.
Yeah, you almost get the impression that, you know, that it's really completely out of their control. I mean, it doesn't really seem like it's too performance-related because they both, you know, they seem to deliver every time they're out in the ring. So, I mean, whether it's political or whether it's something completely out of their control, like you mentioned, where, you know, the top-level brass in WWE don't really feel like they can afford to push and take chances on new talent. You know, with their continual declining television ratings, you know, year over year, and, you know, the declining pay-per-view buys, you know, there seems to be this constant push for growth that seems to come when you're a publicly traded company. And you know, it leads you to be risk-averse in a lot of cases, and I think that's what we're seeing here. You know, we have a lot of talents that are, you know, that seem like they've been right on the verge for a long time, and they just never get that final push over the top due to whatever, you know. And we see WWE bringing in guys like, you know, The Rock and Brock Lesnar to try to get that, you know, that quick surge in popularity, maybe lead to some more people holding on as viewers. But it definitely seems like that would be the primary reason. It's a shame, because I think if they were able to push some of these guys and stick with them, you know, the long-term outlook would be much better than it is currently, where, you know, you have a lot of guys that have been around for a long time who, you know, are getting close to the point of overstaying their welcome at the top of the card. And then you have a lot of these younger guys who, you know, nobody really seems to take seriously because of how many times they've been kind of pushed right up to the top of the ladder and then pulled down again.
Yep. And the downfall seems to be great for Dolph Ziggler every time. I mean, up in the main event of the Royal Rumble 2 years in a row, and then Snooki and John Laurinaitis by WrestleMania. It's a tough road if you're Dolph Ziggler. Let's talk about our number four moment of the week now. This is a TNA one, the segment between Austin Aries, Bully Ray, and Jeremy Borash. I thought there was some really nice promo work done by all three men. Bully Ray is just awesome when he is allowed to just be the bully and be a jerk. And I almost feel like Bully Ray being a bully is a better anti-bullying campaign than anything that the Be a Star program does. Simply because they show you, hey, wrestling's about bullies, and you know what? You're going to see this bully, and he's going to get what's coming to him. Done. I think it's great. Austin Aries is a great talker, and he's shining in TNA as a new top babyface. What did you think of this one?
I actually really enjoyed this segment. I thought it might have been the best pro wrestling segment that we saw on television last week. It was, you know, Bully Ray's performance all throughout was great. You know, Borash, you know, he was Borash. I mean, you can't really expect too much, but he did look good being the much smaller announcer in the ring with, you know, with Bully Ray, who does look a lot more intimidating, you know, when he's in the ring with a smaller guy. And Aries was able to deliver. You know, he managed to mix in some comedy into his promo when he was tearing down Bully Ray, and then the you know, he the physicality that kind of finished up the whole thing was well done. So, you know, from start to finish, I mean, if you were just going to put last week in a bubble, this might have been the most entertaining, you know, wrestling moment of the week. So you got to give them credit for doing something with two guys that, you know, nobody ever at this point saw, you know, making that much of an impact in TNA based on how they'd been previously pushed, you know, kind of surging right to the point where you're like, well, this might be the most interesting feud in TNA right now. So I'm glad they were given the opportunity to do something like this, and I think it's a perfect storyline for Ray and Aries to kind of start off with.
And I think it's a great storyline as we're seeing Austin Aries move up the card. Bully Ray, for really the last year, has been almost the gatekeeper of the main event scene. He's been the guy that, you know, he's not in the world title match unless it's a 3 or 4 way on pay-per-view, but he's up there. And his promo ability keeps him up there. And he's the gatekeeper. He's the guy that you feud with on your way into the main events. And yeah, I think he's a really nice foil to Austin Aries, in that Austin Aries is kind of finding its footing. And I believe that when you have a babyface, a recently turned guy, either way, actually, you need a strong opposite for them to go up against. That was one of my big problems, actually, when Bobby Roode turned, is he didn't have a strong opposite once James Storm was out, and they had some of that, some weirdness going on in that main event scene at that time. You need a strong opposite. You need that strong guy when you turn and launch to go higher in your career. You need someone who is going to help you get there and is going to build you to that point, and that's what I believe that Bully Ray is doing for Austin Aries. How do you feel, and the one criticism I have of this segment, really, and it's really just something I think I'm going to have to get over. How do you feel about the rivalry being so much about Austin Aries' size? To me, my sensibilities say, you know what, let's just not even bring it up. Austin Aries is a tough guy. You know, you may say he's not that big, but, hey, he's vicious and he gets it done. I don't like them mentioning his size as much as they have, simply because I think you risk him being labeled a little man. Or, you know, Rey Mysterio in WWE is called the biggest little man, and that's just such an odd title and something that kind of bothers me. How do you feel about Austin Aries' size being such a big part of this feud?
Well, maybe I guess I look at it a little bit differently than you do. I think it was going to come up at some point, whether it was with Rey or with, you know, once they finally push him into the main event. I mean, he's going to have to overcome the stigma of being, you know, too small for the main event at some point. And having it be with Rey, who could so effectively articulate, you know, the size stereotypes and promos. And, you know, I don't see this feud ending in any other way other than Aries kind of overcoming whatever obstacles they put in his way to get, you know, a meaningful victory over Bully Ray. So the way I look at it is, you know, let's get it out of the way now and let's make it fun, you know, in the sense that Bully Ray is the perfect guy to kind of pick on him about his size. And then when he shuts Ray up, then maybe they can drop it permanently. And I thought that might have been a good approach. And it all depends on how they follow it up. If the rest of Aries' main event career in TNA is all about his size, then this will have been a huge mistake. But if they can, you know, put it front and center and have him squash that bug right away, I think it could be a good idea.
That is a really good point, that if he gets over it now, then when he is challenging for the world title in a year, it's not going to be, oh, you're barely a heavyweight. And what do you think, final note on this rivalry in a way, the X Division title, it's around the waist of Austin Aries right now. What do you think of Aries as X Division champion still, even though he's launching into a higher place on the card? And how do you fix that? How do you kind of solve that situation with Austin Aries still being champion?
I don't know what there is to fix necessarily. You know, if they're going to have him, kind of move into a position where he's challenging for another title, you could probably, you know, use that as a launching point for another X Division guy to have him, you know, have Aries put him over in a solid match and, you know, move on with his life. I don't know if it's a detriment to Aries or the title to be in the position he's in. If anything, having the X Division champ, you know, compete with main eventers and hold his own is good for the division in the long run. So when they have him drop the title, I don't know, but I assume it'll be, you know, before whenever he challenges for the world title. But I guess they can cross that bridge when they get there. If if they want to have him put over somebody and try to, you know, move the X Division title onto somebody else, in a match that would actually mean something and maybe, you know, set up a decent heel in the X Division, that would probably be good too. I don't know where they're going to go with it, but I don't really see it as a problem. If anything, I think it could be an asset to that title when he has to put somebody over.
I guess my concern is, while Austin Aries has moved up, the X Division has basically disappeared. you know, he's mentioned as the Exhibition champion, but there isn't another Exhibition guy on the show. I do believe there is an Exhibition title match on this week's episode of Impact, but it'll be the first time in quite a while that we've seen an Exhibition title match or even an Exhibition match. And, you know, TNA a year ago started trying to put emphasis on the division, and they've rebuilt it from the ground up, you know, eliminating a lot of the guys that were Exhibition stalwarts before. And it seems like they just keep falling into the same trap where the X Division is not a priority for them. But, yeah, I definitely think it could be good for the division as time goes on if Austin Aries is the guy who holds the title and is able to defend the belt in semi-main events. And, you know, a lot of that is getting now a heel in the X Division over to the point that Austin Aries is, which, you know, is something that can be done really with a month of TV, really put behind someone and a lot of importance paid. Moving on to our number three moment, Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan on SmackDown. We talked about Sheamus versus Bryan last week at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, and then they turned around and gave us a match not once but twice on SmackDown this past week. Sheamus and Bryan can go. I think there's almost a little bit of a, you know, we've talked about it, them wanting to prove that in the ring, Sheamus and Daniel Bryan is a good match despite the WrestleMania it was left off and the WrestleMania it was given 20 seconds at. Sheamus and Daniel Bryan, just a great combination of guys in the ring, and I think they proved it again on Friday Night SmackDown that anytime they're in a match against each other, it's going to be worth watching.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, they managed to, you know, to kind of move the focus on to, you know, Del Rio and put the cap on what they were doing with Sheamus and Bryan. I mean, they can always return to it if they want to, because I think, you know, these matches were good enough and competitive enough that people aren't tired of it yet. And, you know, then we, you know, and the quality of the match was great. You know, they went back to the arm thing and, you know, it's kind of strange how many people in WWE are selling arm injuries right now, but I guess that's another conversation. But the psychology was good. The action was strong. You know, Del Rio's interference with the, you know, getting involved at the end was good. You know, it was a good transitional match, and I think it was, you know, necessary to at least satisfy, you know, one final decent final main event on SmackDown. And, it was worth watching. You know, I enjoyed it, and I think the way that whole storyline progressed through the night, through the opening segment all the way to the main event was pretty good TV.
Yeah, it was just a fun show. It gave SmackDown a nice narrative flow as it went through it, and I think matches like this are the reason you watch SmackDown. We've talked before about how SmackDown a lot of times exists in a separate universe than Raw, and then we even saw this week SmackDown's title match get changed on Raw with a big angle happening on Raw with a, you know, aside from the fact that it was SmackDown wrestlers and one Raw wrestler, no real mention that this was normally something that would happen on SmackDown. So with SmackDown being almost demoted in a way, it's nice to see matches like this happening, and really it gives fans a reason to watch the SmackDown show because you're almost guaranteed to get some good action and, you know, some little storyline developments that maybe you're not going to see on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, I mean, the storyline on SmackDown, I mean, last week was pretty good. You know, they had that opening, you know, disqualification, mm-hmm. You know, they kind of moved all the way throughout the show with the injury angle, you know, and then they capped off the show with another great, you know, I think it was a 10 or 12 minute match between, you know, Sheamus and Bryan. So, I think, you know, if you're a WWE fan and you watch Raw on a regular basis, you know, SmackDown is a show that definitely has a much different feel to it. There's a lot of younger guys that are kind of moving up onto the SmackDown brand from FCW. You know, they do seem to spend a little bit more time in the ring on SmackDown. And I think if you're, you know, if you're a fan of a more traditional wrestling show, you know, if you watched, you know, wrestling years ago before it kind of morphed into this mostly sports entertainment and, you know, the kind of the Russo analogy that, you know, if he could have made a show without the ring, he would have done it. And I think, you know, Raw kind of conveys that a lot of short matches and a lot of backstage segments. But SmackDown is much different. And I think a lot of the times, you know, it's a nice change of pace from what we normally see on Raw. So if you don't normally catch SmackDown, it might be worth your time if you're into a more traditional show.
Yeah, it's definitely between that and Ring of Honor, the place where you're going to get the best matches of the week, and storyline development-wise, SmackDown sometimes does a really nice job of building things and that are almost SmackDown exclusive or things you only see there. You know, it's a really, for people who think the show's been downplayed enough and the Raw Super Show is giving you your dose of WWE as a whole, I would say go back and check out SmackDown. Let's talk about now our number two moment of the week, and that was the building of the SmackDown half of the main event equation at Over the Limit, the Jericho and Del Rio versus Sheamus and Orton tag match, and the way it built into a four-way match at the pay-per-view. Jake, what did you think of this one?
Well, I thought it was an interesting twist on that match at Over the Limit. You know, they managed to actually have a storyline on television that led to kind of a logical four-way match, and we see that so rarely. I mean, I guess to start with the match, I mean, it was a pretty interesting, you know, tag match from what we normally see out of WWE booking, which is, you know, the babyfaces end up getting the win, after a rapid-fire series of finishing moves. And we actually saw the opposite here with Chris Jericho actually picking up a win on television for the first time. He probably picked up some singles wins, but this was the first meaningful win he picked up on television in months. And, you know, it put him in a position to challenge. He made the case right after the match that he should be challenging for the title. He's been the world champion. And, I thought that was refreshing. And then, you know, the backstage segment with the argument and, all four men kind of getting into it again backstage in front of Eve and Laurinaitis was good, too. So this was very good. I mean, it was interesting, and it actually led to a four-way match that just didn't feel like it was packed together. And that's not what we usually see from WWE. So I enjoyed this very much.
Yeah, it wasn't, it's a four-way pay-per-view, so we've got to have four challengers situation. It wasn't a, well, we have these four guys type of thing. It was, hey, we had this main event, but you know what? Circumstances pushed us to adding people to this main event, and now it is logical because we have a grudge between Sheamus and Orton now. We have, you know, Chris Jericho with a victory over Sheamus, and we have Del Rio, who won a number one contenders match last month, so he deserves a shot. Hey, let's just put it all together in one. It's the first time in a long time I can remember a four-way happening at least semi-organically. And yeah, it all happened across two segments, and at the end of the first segment you could see where it was going, but that's not a bad thing because it means that there's logic on a wrestling show. So I really liked it. I enjoyed the tag match itself too. I thought that all four men did some really good work, and this just makes the pay-per-view feel a little bit bigger. Now, do you think this is the chance for the World Heavyweight Championship to actually close a pay-per-view for the first time in 2012?
It's definitely possible. I think there's enough star power in the match that it might be worth that. It depends on what the stipulation ends up being for Punk and Bryan. If that's just a regular singles match, maybe you do put this one on last, but If they do something creative with Punk and Bryan's stipulation, whether it's a submissions match or whatever they want to do, I think maybe you might want to put that one on last just because it's just based on how well those two work together, it could be something spectacular. But if there was a point in the year where you wanted to put the World Heavyweight title in the main event slot, this match definitely has the star power to back that up.
Yeah. It's a nice way to move Orton back into the title scene on SmackDown, where he's been missing for a while, and, you know, a way to capitalize on Orton's star power without giving away Sheamus versus Orton, which I think is a big match that they want to build to down the road. A really nice segment, and it almost, for me at least, was the best segment of the week, and it really, we were talking about it as number two, but it came close. I had to put some thought into my vote between these two. And, our number one moment did end up winning, and that was Paul Heyman's promo on Monday Night Raw. It was good to see Heyman back. It was nice to see a guy who could make a big return and still get over as a heel. That's something that in wrestling today we don't see. You know, nostalgia kind of takes over at points, but Paul Heyman very clearly cut a heel promo and did a really nice job of it. What did you think of Heyman's promo and the crowd reaction to his return?
You know, I don't know how many everyday WWE fans really have strong memories of Paul Heyman. I mean, all of us do because we on the web just because we've been watching forever. But it didn't seem like there was a huge, massive reaction for Heyman. And maybe, you know, that will change as he makes more appearances on TV and you can get, you know, a little bit better of an idea of, just how great he is as a complete sleazeball. But, I was thrilled to see Heyman. You know, the first Lesnar and Cena, or excuse me, Lesnar and Heyman, proposition on television in 2002, that was kind of, that was fun. And then, you know, you had Heyman become Brock's business partner in real life, and now we have, now we have him back on television in kind of a similar role with, art imitating life in a way here. So I'm looking forward to see what they can do because, you know, there's a lot of real life elements that they can bring up with Brock's prior frustrations with WWE and Paul's prior frustrations with WWE and vice versa with, you know, other talent talking about, their backstage reputations and whatnot. So, if they want to make this as realistic and legitimate as they claim, some of those issues are going to have to come up. And I'm excited to see, what Paul can produce from a promo standpoint because he is, he is the original pipe bomb guy, if you want to call it that. So I'm excited about what Paul can do, and I think, judging by the reaction from people online, I think everybody else is too.
Yeah, I mean, this was the tip of the iceberg for me with Paul Heyman, and I think he can add so much to Brock Lesnar's act. We talked about it after after Lesnar's second weekend about, hey, he was on the show too much, he was forced to talk too much, we need a little more, silent, tough Brock Lesnar, and I think that's what Paul Heyman offers him the ability to be. You know, Heyman can do the talking, can get him over as a heel, Brock Lesnar can be the ass kicker that we know he is, and that's how that's how you use Brock Lesnar and don't overexpose him. And it would have been great to see him before the match with Cena. However, we didn't. Now we're going to see him here. There's rumors out there that Heyman's only around until SummerSlam, and I do hope that Heyman ends up around for all of Brock Lesnar's run. He adds just a little bit of an intangible to the act and helps Brock to keep the elusive Brock Lesnar mystique that we've talked about so much. And this is just a solid promo all around from Heyman. Who else can make it reading a letter that exciting than Paul Heyman? It definitely showed just what he can do promo-wise and how good he was. I think a lot of fans are disappointed about the reaction for Heyman, but I don't see it as, hey, Heyman got a really bad reaction. I see it as they were in Greensboro. They weren't in Philly. They weren't in New York. They weren't in a place where ECW is held in really high regard. They were in Greensboro. The fans were really not into the show anyways, and can you blame those fans with a, hey, you don't get Brock Lesnar. Oh, John Cena? John Cena's not here either, guys. Just hang out in your seats. I understand being upset at that point when you look at the type of fans who go to WWE shows and you know kind of what they go for and they weren't getting it. So, yeah, just kind of a really good promo highlighting an off week, I would say, in wrestling for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I guess from my perspective, I don't see, Heyman's reintroduction as, anything more than what we saw on Monday. I mean, he's going to be the legal counsel. He's going to be the guy who's there, to speak for Brock. And, hopefully he gets better reactions in other towns. But, I think Heyman is so, is so good as a heel on the mic that, it won't take long for fans to just react to him anyway. I think he's that strong of a personality and that polarizing of a figure. You know, people love to hate him, and that's been the case his entire, you know, career, whether he was a manager, a promoter, or, you know, a general manager, an announcer. It doesn't matter. You know, people either love or hate Paul Heyman. And, you know, I don't think there's a better guy that they could have brought in to be the mouthpiece for Brock. And, you know, depending on where this angle with Triple H goes, you know, and the whole, you know, the firing and the contract stuff they did on Monday, you know, I'm legitimately interested to see, you know, where Heyman and Lesnar go now from here, because they definitely threw, you know, a wrench in the works as far as the, you know, the I quit stuff. And, you know, Cole mentioned that he probably would have been fired anyway and all that stuff. So, you know, how they reintroduce Brock back onto television now will be, you know, it'll be interesting. And I'm hoping, you know, this time, now that he has a mouthpiece, then they can do a fresh kind of reintroduction, you know, that we'll get to see the best of Lesnar rather than, you know, what we saw on the microphone, you know, during that first couple of weeks back.
Yeah, and like you said, Heyman's good enough. He's not going to get a babyface pop. I mean, maybe if they're in Madison Square Garden, Heyman's going to get a babyface pop. But if they're, you know, I think he's good enough to get over as a heel with most of the casual fans. You're always going to have those few, you know, middle-aged dudes out there going ECW. But there aren't going to be a ton of them, and if Heyman's over as a heel, I think even those guys are going to be willing to play along to a certain extent. Yeah, let's talk about the worst of the week now. This is where it gets fun. We get to talk a little bit about some of the things that didn't work in wrestling. And before we get there, I just want to give a quick plug to the .NET membership page. And I mean quick. Go to ProWrestling.net. If you want to become a member for as low as $5.50 a month if you take the annual option, or $7.50 if you just want to try it out for a month, on the right-hand side of the page, boom, click that membership link. It'll take you to a sign-up page. Within 2 minutes, you've got ad-free access to ProWrestling.net, including interviews, weekly audio shows where we run down news, events, you know, just show by show. And, you know, a lot of other stuff, .NET members forum, exclusive first-run news. Basically, the .NET membership site, it's awesome if you're a wrestling fan. If you like wrestling audio and all that, check it out. You guys have heard us plug it a ton of times on the All Access podcast, so that's all I'll give you for now. ProWrestling.net, link on the right-hand side of the page. Hey, the man. Our worst moments of the week, aside from that plug. The number three worst, the gut check. Just, it's not higher on the list because there's potential in it, but the gut check segment, I talked about it on Thursday. Run it down for me, Jake.
Well, you know, I guess my biggest problem with it, and you know, I don't know if you agree with me or not. You'll have to pipe in if you do. But, you know, I thought Ric Flair completely ruined that thing. You know, if you were trying to do a reality show segment about the wrestling business, you know, don't you want to kind of give people a soft landing so that they're not completely, you know, assaulted with pro wrestling terms, you know, the first time they run through it on television? I thought Ric Flair was way too inside. You know, I don't mind him being negative about somebody, you know, because there's always that one judge on all these reality shows that kind of craps on everybody's picnic. But, you know, he got way too out of the depth of most people who watch wrestling shows. You know, TNA fans, for the most part, you know, if you look through the audience, I don't know how many of them are, you know, are real, you know, astute followers of pro wrestling, you know, as far as online commentary and you know, insider terms and that kind of vocabulary. And Ric Flair kind of dove right into that stuff right away. And it didn't really relent at any point, you know, and most of the things that he was talking about were, you know, were insider terms. And I thought that part of it, you know, really kind of dragged down the whole segment. And, you know, overall, I mean, it was okay for a concept. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of things that they need to improve. You know, the presentation wasn't all that stellar. You know, it was just three guys standing in the ring once they got that far, you know, and having the incoming, you know, rookie kind of stand in front of them. It didn't really feel like there was any change. You know, they didn't even do a set change for it. You know, the backstage stuff was just in a conference room. You know, the on-screen stuff in front of the crowd was just done in the ring. You know, I think they need to revamp this concept and do something that has a much different feel than what they're giving us, and at least tell Flair to tone down the insider crap.
Yeah, it was the insider stuff that really kind of got to me about it too. I think the biggest problem, though, when you step back and look at it, and I think that it's the biggest issue with this first, you know, iteration of the concept. Alex Silva lost a match to one of the lowest wrestlers on the TNA totem pole in 2 minutes. And Alex Silva did not get a lot of offense in that match, yet somehow he got a TNA contract. I'm not saying, you know, you have him win the match. I'm saying you have him bring it to Robbie E and slip on a banana peel and make it a, you know, you can even do the same thing in 2 minutes. He brings it to Robbie E, you know, he gets a little nervous, or you see him make one move that Robbie E is able to reverse into his finisher, and then you say, Alex Silva had a great effort out there against Robbie E. I'm amazed at what Alex Silva was able to do against Robbie E. And you have, you know, Ric Flair, Bruce Pritchard, and Al Snow talk about that. And, you know, and then you have the judging segments happen and have them talk about how good he is. And not insider, but say, hey, you know what? Look at this clothesline he threw. That is a clothesline like I haven't seen in years. You know, he's got it. This kid can be something special. He went out there and gave it his all, and he made one wrong move. I don't think we should punish him for one wrong move. He's good enough to get a contract. And, you know, maybe you still have Flair going, I don't think he can cut it. You know, he slipped on that banana peel. That's an issue for me. I think that if you're going to make that rookie mistake, you don't deserve a contract in TNA. And then Pritchard's the middle voice. He's the guy, you know, he's not marking out for the wrestler, but he's not going, well, Ric Flair is totally right all the time. But he can be that guy in the middle. But they didn't do that. They had the guy lose a squash match, and then they said that he worked hard enough for a contract. It just, you know, that didn't make sense. Bruce Pritchard going, well, you've shown a lot in OVW. That's great. The fans haven't seen that. You know, this is supposed to be judged based on what happens on Impact. Already, they took away some of the impact of that gut check match. And the fact that the judges weren't even decided before the match. Not that they had to be sitting out there judging and during it, but, hey, it might have been a good way to, you know, hook some people in, have, say, next week, Bruce Pritchard, Al Snow, and Ric Flair are going to talk about this. The segment itself, while I think that there is a lot of good, and even in their presentation, some of the reality TV show stuff, I think is kind of fun, because that's what they're going for. I just don't see it as a winning concept at this point. What did you think of Alex Silva's promo, to kind of take something in isolation? Did you think that he cut a pretty decent promo, and did you appreciate the judges' reactions to it?
You know, he kind of started, he cut that first promo for like, what was it, 10 or 15 seconds before Flair interrupted him and told him not to talk to the marks, talk to us. And you know, I think he did a decent job of, you know, trying to convey, you know, what a personal struggle it was for him to try to get into wrestling, you know, being, you know, as poor as it seems he was for such a stretch of time. But I mean, the delivery of the promo wasn't fantastic. I mean, he didn't really convey, you know, a range of emotion. He mostly just kind of talked louder to signify that he was, you know, he was charged up about it. So, I mean, it wasn't fantastic, but I mean, it was okay. I guess, you know, they gave him a contract, but I still think the guy has a long way to go before, you know, you can really consider him, you know, ready for television.
I didn't really like the promo all that much. I understood what he was going for, and more I understood the promo, but I didn't like the judges' reactions to it. The don't talk to the marks, talk to us thing that Flair was doing, why did he have to do that? I mean, once again, it's Flair going to insider and really saying the fans are dumb. You know, and I understand that they wanted this segment to seem kind of inside, but that was, I mean, insulting your fans is not the way to do that. Flair was unimpressive here. and his whole reaction, you know, they made a big deal about the judges needing, you know, two out of three have to agree for you to get the contract. Well, then why did Flair change his vote in that reaction? You know, instead of it coming down to Bruce Pritchard and being a big moment where Pritchard goes, you know what, I was going to say no. Your in-ring performance wasn't impressive. I didn't think he showed what it took. But then I heard you cut that promo. And you know what? My vote is a yes. Instead of that being a big moment, Flair just went, I'm changing my vote. Pound it. Well, that's a contract now. That's okay. That's chill if you want to do that. Do you believe that, how would you push Alex Silva going forward? What would you do with him now that he is under contract? And I'm assuming you want to make the gut check seem important, so you want to put him in a prominent role.
You know, maybe you put him in some opening matches to start, at the beginning of the show for a couple of weeks, you know, try to get some legs under him. And, you know, eventually, maybe a month or two down the line, you can get him to the point where he's comfortable enough in the ring and on the mic to have one of those weekly television title, appearances. He doesn't have to win the first time out. But, I mean, I think you need to establish a pattern to where these guys are consistently making progress, on television. Otherwise, the gut check thing will just kind of fall by the wayside pretty quickly.
Yeah, he has to show up on TV, and I don't see him as anything more than an opening match guy. Maybe, you know, the X Division, it's like four or five wrestlers, depending on who they want to fly in. So maybe they do put him in the X Division, like they mentioned, but I don't see Alex Silva being a big star. I really don't see this concept lasting more than 3 or 4 months, much like the TNA Top 10 ranking system and other things that they've done. I think they get distracted from it. I think they find that it doesn't draw the ratings that they want it to. And, you know, part of that is they're not telling a compelling story with it. So that's kind of their fault. But let's use this now to segue into our second worst moment of the week, our number two on the worst list. Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair open up Impact with some crazy old man promos. Why?
That's a great question. You know, it definitely seems like, you know, whenever these guys are on television, that they're talking about other people, but in the end, it's really just about them. And that's the part of it that seems the most disappointing. You know, they have these guys who are, you know, into their, well, is Hogan 60 yet? I can't remember if he's 60 yet, but Flair is in his early 60s. You know, they're both well past any kind of, presentability in the ring. You know, they both look preposterous out there. It's getting to the point where, you know, it's just, why aren't you putting other people over on the microphone? You know, you're there specifically in these roles because, you know, you're legends and you have the ability, you know, with your promo ability to get these younger guys over and make them seem meaningful. Yet, you know, they talk about younger wrestlers, but they always manage to bring it back to their legacy and you know, their in-ring careers and, you know, what happened between them in the past. And, you know, this week it was about, you know, Flair always getting bossed around by Hogan and, you know, Hogan trying his best to placate him, and they ended it by, you know, talking for a few minutes about this whole gut check thing, and how, you know, Flair now has a chance to do something meaningful with the youngsters. And I guess for me, it just kind of fell hollow because he's been in TNA for several years now, and neither of them have done anything meaningful to put over the young talent that's already there. You know, why do they need to bring in, you know, these new talents in order for Flair to put somebody over? It felt like a waste to me. And like you said, it was just crazy old man promos. And, they should be spending more time, putting over the talent that's already carrying the water for the company.
Yeah, it's treading water. Hulk Hogan going, I believe it was in this one, TNA has a shot, brother, at being one of the longest-running promotions of all time. What? What does that even mean? Like, now we're just, you know, we're not going for quality, guys. We're going for distance. That's the point. I mean, you can be a long-running promotion and still not make money. I think, actually, TNA is proving that constantly. This was just a bad segment. It didn't make sense. It wasn't... It led to something later in the show with the gut check, but it really was disappointing. It was Hogan and Flair talking, you know, doing lip service to the young guys while they're taking up the opening segment, which is one of the highest rated segments on Impact. And it's also, you know, since 1997, the opening segment and the main event have been the two most important segments on a wrestling show. Opening segment is where big things happen. The main event is, well, Hogan and Flair are in the segment where big things happen instead of your younger talent that you're supposedly trying to get over.
Yeah, I just don't feel it between them anymore. I mean, I just have no reaction to what they're doing. You know, there was a point in both of their careers where you could at least say that, you know, they were entertaining and, you know, engaging on the microphone. But now that they've completely gone past, you know, the point where they're, you know, anywhere near entertaining in the ring, it's just like, well, now you have a golden opportunity in the twilight, you know, of your career to do something meaningful for people, you know, who are employing you and giving you money to basically just take up time on a television show. I mean, they aren't really meaningful characters on the show. I mean, Hogan is the general manager, but you know, he doesn't do much for anybody backstage. I mean, mostly it's just Hogan cutting nonsensical Hogan promos, you know, to hype matches. And Flair's in the same boat. You know, they're not putting anybody over in any meaningful way. Every time they're out there, it's still all about them. And they have to, you know, I don't know if it's even in their, you know, in their heart to go out there and put anybody else over. I think they're, you know, their entire lives have been this long delusional ride where they actually think they're winning out there. They've actually carried, you know, this whole wrestling business by themselves, and that, you know, it wasn't the efforts of a lot of other people that got them to where they were. You kind of get tired of putting up with their delusions for as long as we have. And I'm just waiting for them to kind of have that click in their heads that, wait a minute, you know, if we want this business to survive for other people, we're going to have to, you know, to finally get to the point where we're out there on the stick passing the torch.
Yeah, and I think you said on the in the .NET members forum, it was a discussion about, oddly enough, Shawn Michaels versus the Dude Busters in some sort of who's your favorite tournament. And you said, you know, Shawn Michaels is in the argument for number one of all time. And you can make that argument a lot better than maybe you can make an argument for Flair or Hogan. And before, you know, Chris Shore and his drugged up state calls me to kill me, look at what Flair's done. You know, look at Flair from the year 2000 on. What, you know, in the last 12 years, Flair's been active in the business. And what has he done? You know, what has his career been? I can't think of a whole lot of good that he did in WWE aside from a cage match with Triple H, a cage match with Randy Orton, both of which were great. I think that it was at, like, Taboo Tuesday 04 and 05 that just were awesome. His match with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 24, and, you know, he had a kind of good match with Mick Foley in TNA. Like, those are the matches that I can think of from that time period. Ric Flair is hurting his legacy. Hulk Hogan is hurting his legacy here, and, you know, it seems like they just kind of want to keep going out and cutting masturbatory promos instead of actually, you know, doing the hard work that it might be to get some talent over and to leave themselves off of shows or to put themselves in supporting roles.
Well, you know, if you look at guys like, you know, Michael, I guess he would be the best example of this. You know, he had a chip on his shoulder for a long time, and he, you know, even to the point where he retired, you know, I think he always had that aversion to going out there and doing jobs. But I think he did, you know, a lot of them. You know, he lost in a lot of WrestleManias, Kurt Angle, John Cena, you know, to be specific, you know, and then the last two to The Undertaker. I mean, you know, even if you're going to be Shawn, the quality of Shawn Michaels and going out there and having great matches until the day you retire. You know, if you don't want to stick around and you know, and put people over ad infinitum until you just can't go anymore, you know, just have the, you know, hang up the boots, man. I mean, just, you know, just walk away. I mean, I don't know what, you know, the issue is for Hogan and Flair, but I mean, they're not benefiting themselves and they're not really benefiting anyone else in the roles they're currently in. You know, if they want to be backstage and you know, assisting people put together matches and you know, giving people promo advice, you know, all the things that somebody with that much experience is more than capable and probably great at doing, you know, that would be the role that you want to see him in. And, you know, maybe an occasional appearance on television with, you know, just to get that huge pop that legends generally get when they return. But you know, it's like you're past the point of being a meaningful regular on-air character. You can't go in the ring anymore. You know, even if you try, there's a pretty significant chance you're going to end up permanently injured. You know, if you can't go out there and cut a promo that doesn't have a specific purpose of putting somebody else over, what are you doing with them? I just don't know. I don't see how it benefits TNA, you know, in the long term, because at some point these guys are just going to go away. And if you've been paying them, you know, whatever they've been paying them, probably, you know, in six figures, if not more over the contract period, you know, what have you gotten out of it? If nothing, you know, the ratings haven't gone up, pay-per-view buys haven't gone up. They're not putting anybody over on television. They can't have meaningful matches. What is the purpose of Hogan and Flair and TNA aside from, you know, the masturbatory stuff that we've been talking about for the last couple of minutes? It just seems really, it's a really bizarre position to be in as a wrestling promotion. I mean, you don't want to be the people that, you know, that force Hogan and Flair out of the business forever. But at some point, don't you at least have to look at your bottom line and say these guys aren't helping, and if they aren't willing to change, then we have to do something about it? I just don't get it.
I don't think they're out of the business forever. If TNA, you know, says, hey, guys, you know what, if Dixie, you know, grows a set and says, hey, we're not going to use you guys anymore, you know, we don't have the money, we don't have the roster space, and what you cost us is, you know, the money that it costs us to have you is inversely proportional to the money that you've been bringing in. So we're sorry, but we will see you later. It's not like WWE isn't going to bring him in the next few months for, you know, a Legends Night type thing, for programming on the WWE Network, for, you know, for any of that. I think Hogan becomes available when WWE uses them on TV within a year. Flair becomes, heck, WWE uses Flair on TV without him being, you know, with him being under contract to TNA. And I believe that Flair would be around and they might use them as part of an angle or to cut some promos or, you know, to be part of the ongoing series of people of Hall of Fame talent losing faith slowly in John Cena. You know, there are all of those things that these guys can do, that they can be a part of. It's not like TNA is the, you know, the end of the line for them, but it would be the end of the line as a constant weekly character. Yeah. So that's not fantastic. Let's talk now about our number one worst moment of the week. And this was the Raw main event. CM Punk versus Fat Muta and Daniel Bryan. And yeah, I'm just calling him Fat Muta now. I'm sorry, I can't get over it. He's just so large and almost immobile. Here's one thing. I know you've watched a little more Giant Bernard from Japan than me. Was he slimmer in Japan when he was having great matches, or was it just that he looked more imposing so it worked? Because Albert was out of shape.
Yeah, you know, I guess it's hard to put into words what, you know, how disappointing this whole thing has been. Cause I did watch quite a few, you know, matches with, you know, with Bernard in Japan, and he did look a lot sharper than this. And whether, you know, whether it's just nerves or whether it's, you know, just unfortunate series of, mistakes or, you know, whatever it is, he just does not look very good on WWE TV. And I can't say that he looked, you know, much different than he looked in Japan. I mean, he always was rather large, and, you know, he never really was a muscle-bound guy. But maybe it's just, you know, the size of Japanese wrestlers is smaller in general. So, you know, you might have a point there that he just looked more imposing. But, you know, he just has not looked intimidating or crisp or, you know, any of that stuff that you would have hoped on WWE television. And, you know, I think the character has something to do with that. Obviously, his performances haven't been up to par, you know, so that has a lot to do with it. But he's kind of fallen on his face here, and it's sad to see because I had a lot of optimism for him when I heard he was coming back.
Yeah, it's weird because when I saw the vignettes and I knew it was Albert, I said, hey, I'm going to give this a chance. You know, Lord Tensai, yeah, it's off, you know, you don't change how Albert looks. But I thought this could be a really cool thing to do. He has been in Japan for a while. We haven't seen him for a long time. I'll bet in the ring he's going to, you know, I was just looking at his in-ring work and thinking it's going to be impressive. It's become the stereotypical Japanese wrestler with the mist. Then you've got the claw hold, so it's like, he's a Japanese, like, Von Erich. What are we going with here? And then on top of it, you've got just the disappointing booking surrounding him, and really, he just looks ridiculous. More than anything else, more than, you know, when I look at a picture of Lord Tensai wrestling, I see a fat dude in a Mortal Kombat outfit. Like, I just see this chubber walking around like, hey, yeah, I'm gonna put my claw on you. It's disappointing and really just sad. I feel bad for him because it doesn't feel like he's going to get a fair shake in WWE when he may be super talented just because he's not putting in good performances here at the beginning, whether it's nerves being back on that stage or it's just that he doesn't have what it takes to be part of the WWE product. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. You know, a lot of his success in Japan was, you know, was in tag team matches. You know, he was part of Bad Intentions with, you know, Machine Gun Carl Anderson. And you know, he fit into that role, you know, very well. And I'm not sure if it's just, you know, readjusting to, you know, doing the majority of the work in a singles match. You know, cause, I mean, that spot with the Baldo bomb, I guess whatever you want to call it, the choke power bomb, on Monday where he didn't even get CM Punk off the ground. You know, I don't know who to blame that one on, but it definitely, you know, it just looks sloppy. And then, you know, the claw doesn't really even, you know, nobody buys the claw anymore. I mean, whoever made the call to make that his finisher, you know, if it was him, you know, that's disappointing, but I get the feeling that it was, you know, it was probably somebody in creative that had that idea. But, you know, it's just not working, and they have to go back to the drawing board quickly. You know, they never really defined who this character is, you know, what the significance of the Japanese influence is. You know, it's hard to believe that WWE creative has that much of a, you know, a finger on the pulse of Japanese culture to even be able to articulate what all that was. And so it all just came off ham-fisted. You know, so he kind of stumbled out of the block just on from a character standpoint, and then, you know, the performances just haven't been there either, so... you know, despite having, you know, major victories, you know, over Cena and CM Punk, and, you know, he just isn't picking up momentum, and they need to make some major changes quickly because it's just not clicking. And I think the fan reactions in the arenas are pretty good evidence of that. He's just kind of being greeted by total silence.
Yeah. People don't care. The one time they did was his match with John Cena, which I thought was really good, and even landed them on the best list a couple weeks ago. But people just don't care about Lord Tensai at this point. And like you said, they need to go back to the drawing board. They need to figure out what's not working with this character. They need to change up the look. They need to do something to make Lord Tensai work. If they want to. If they don't want it to work, that's fine. But there were two other ingredients in this main event as well, and those were Daniel Bryan teaming with Lord Tensai and CM Punk. I thought there was an intentional effort not to show Daniel Bryan getting cheered on this show. His entrance happened during the commercial break. He really didn't do much in the match. It was a lot of Tensai versus Punk stuff. I thought that I liked that effort because they are trying to get Bryan over as a heel, although I would have liked to have seen Bryan get a little more over on Punk in the actual match than he did, simply because that is the pay-per-view main event that we are building towards.
Yeah, I mean, you would have hoped they would have seen more. I don't know why they're so afraid of of Bryan getting, you know, a smattering of cheers. They don't seem to silence it much on SmackDown most of the time. And I think, you know, he does get some initial cheers because of the yes chance. But, you know, whenever he opens his mouth, people do boo him. You know, he is able to elicit that reaction from crowds. So, you know, I wish they had more confidence in Bryan to be able to deliver, you know, from that standpoint as a character. And, you know, I did like the post-match interaction between, you know, Bryan and Punk. I think it did set up Bryan as a contender. So I guess I'm willing to forgive him not spending much time in the match. But, you know, I think they just need to get over their apprehension of sending him out there and letting him do his thing. Because, you know, if the crowd starts out cheering him and then he's able to convert them to boos every time, I think that says a lot about how good he is as a heel right now.
Yeah, and he is. I mean, Daniel Bryan as a heel right now is right up there with Paul Heyman in his promo on Monday night. Like, you give Daniel Bryan a microphone, and he can change the yes chance to no chance pretty quickly. He can get people not, you know, to buy into his act as a heel, not just going, yeah, we like this guy, because he's that good. Punk, I think the biggest disappointment for me coming out of this handicap main event, and the reason I put it as number one worst, I thought for sure that when we saw Punk and Lord Tensai lock up, that they were going to have some magic together. I thought that was one of the main reasons that they brought Tensai in was, hey, this guy can have a great match with CM Punk, look legitimate, and put Punk over big, or even win the championship. Who knows what they were thinking originally, but I thought that would be huge. The chance to see them in the ring together excited me, and then when I saw what we actually got from those two, I was very disappointed. You know, we talked about the Punk, about the Tensai character already. What did you think of this match and the effect it had on CM Punk? He was all over the show since John Cena was only there via satellite. Did you like Punk's performance on Monday night, and did you think it justified returning Punk to the main event segment where he hasn't been in quite a while?
Yeah, you know, I don't put much of the fault on why that final main event didn't really work on Punk. I mean, you know, whenever no matter who he's in the ring with, generally he isn't the weakest link. So I hesitate to put much of the blame on him. But, you know, he definitely kind of walked into that Cena role on Monday, you know, from the opening segment on. You know, he was kind of tasked with carrying the show as the lead babyface. And you know, I'm not sure he wears that hat very well. You know, he doesn't seem like he's you know, he's that enthused about being the lead babyface. I think he probably prefers to be the guy who's the anti-hero. And, you know, I think the result of that just kind of was a mediocre performance, just kind of on the back of the fact that he didn't really feel like he dove into it. I mean, it just didn't seem like the effort was there like it normally is. And maybe I'm probably nitpicking, but in the end, I just didn't feel the enthusiasm from Punk like we normally do on Monday for some reason.
Yeah. Maybe he used it all on Twitter talking about Paul Heyman and didn't have the enthusiasm left to put on a good match. Who knows? But that's going to wrap up the countdown for this week. Like we mentioned before, guys, ProWrestling.net, check out that membership option. It's well worth it. Thank you, Jake, for joining me today. Thank you guys for listening. And for Jake Barnett, this is Will Pruitt signing off.